p.m. BULOVA Boulevard Watch Time. WABC New York.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're speaking to you now from the main ballroom of the Dayton Biltmore Hotel in Dayton, Ohio. National Convention headquarters for the Fraternal Order of Eagles. This broadcast has been arranged so that Eagles all over the country, unable to attend this year's National Convention, might hear a few words from their superior officers. It's my pleasure at this time to present George F. Douglas of Philadelphia, Grand Worthy President of the Fraternal Order of Eagles. Mr. Douglas.
My friends, it's a real pleasure to see assembled in this auditorium the thousands of men and women attending the opening session of the 37th annual session of the Fraternal Order of Eagles. At this time, it is my pleasure to present to you one of the two outstanding characters of this order. This brother, together with his pal and friend of more than a quarter of a century, Conrad H. Mann of Kansas City, Missouri, have led this order to glorious accomplishments for which it is renowned. He has served this order as Grand Treasurer, as Grand Worthy President, and for years has been the editor of the Eagle magazine. It is my pleasure at this time to present past Grand Worthy President Frank E. Herring of South Bend, Indiana. Frank Herring.
During the last hour, the very eloquent governor of the state of Ohio, the very able mayor of the city of Dayton, and the very effective representative of the president of the United States, Dr. Brady, who is connected with the State Department, have entertained and informed a gathering of 1,000 men and women who on this occasion are assembled in connection with the opening of the Grand Area of the Fraternal Order of Eagles. The Columbia Broadcasting Station has given us the use of its magnificent system for a period of 15 minutes. During that time, on behalf of the Fraternal Order of Eagles, of the Grand Area here assembled, I wish to call your attention to one phase of our program, that during the year that is to come, we shall put all the dynamic energy of the order in order that a law number 2 upon the calendar of the House of Representatives may become effective and function in the interest of the entire country. Those who have preceded me have stated that this order has justly been given credit for writing the first mother's pension bill. That passed as a law in the state of Missouri in the year 1911. They have given credit to this order for the campaign that has led to the adoption of old age pensions in 34 states of the Union. At the present time, the Federal Security Bill has as one of its sections an old age pension measure that will be national in scope. Those states conforming to the demands of the Federal Act will receive federal assistance. In addition to this, those that have preceded have given just credit to this order for the institution of Mother's Day, as attested by the monument in the city of Indianapolis, certifying to the fact that in the year 1904, the first nationwide address for a national Mother's Day was made in that city by a national officer of the Fraternal Order of Eagles before a gathering and under the auspices of the Fraternal Order of Eagles. Now let me take you back to the year 1921. We had barely passed the World War. However, because of the excellence of our factories, of the discipline of our working men, we were producing many more commodities than we could possibly use, raising in the farm, much more than we could possibly consume, or at that time that we could export favorably abroad. We had then as our grand worthy president, Congressman John M. Morris of the city of Pittsburgh. He was the chairman of a highly important committee on military affairs in the House of Representatives. Mr. Morin, a past grand-worthy president of Pittsburgh area, William L. Brennan, and the speaker, cooperated in drafting a bill, which Mr. Morin introduced in the House of Representatives. This was 14 years ago. Let me recite for you some of the specific provisions of that bill. At that time, there was a depression as a result of the conditions that I have just enumerated. And millions of men were out of work. In the aggregate, about 3.5 million of men. Factories were closing. It is a question what the federal government would do. The bill that was presented to Congress by Mr. Morin provided, first, for an appropriation of $5 billion. Please compare that with the $4.8 billion recently appropriated by the Congress of the United States and placed at the disposition of the President of the United States. The bill also provided for the purchase of submarginal land. It provided for reclamation projects so that the desert, the arid regions of this country might have great irrigation ditches that would be filled with water impounded in dams that were to be built by the unemployed in order that during more favorable times the desert would literally bloom as the rose. Provisions were made in the bill for the building of roads, of trunk lines, if you will, east and west and north and south. Provisions were made for grade crossing. Provisions were made for deepening rivers and for building along the sides of rivers those contrivances that would prevent disaster in times of flood. In other words, most of the things that the PWA provide for today were provided for in the bill introduced by the grand-worthy president of this order, then Congressman John J. Morin of Pittsburgh in the year 1921. But shortly after, times became better. Men forgot the disastrous 2 years, 1920 and 21, and part of 1922. Our factories began to buzz. Our agricultural products found ready sale abroad. And as a result, it is very difficult to interest the members of Congress or interest any substantial part of our people in the provisions of the Morin Bill. Then we entered upon the decade that literally is known as the gold decade that ended in 1929. That October day, 1929, when the stock exchange went to smash, although the depression had really begun some 6 months earlier, men were bewildered. They did not know what to do. The President of the United States at the time was bewildered. The Secretary of the Treasury of the United States at the time was bewildered. The great magnates, the industrial leaders, as well as the great bankers were bewildered. Some of them said, prosperity is around the corner. Another said, I have such faith in oil that I will buy it $50 million worth of Standard Oil if it's offered for sale. This had the effect of stimulating the people to a renewed confidence in the country. And then for a time, the debacle was stopped. But only momentarily, because within another month or two, there began the long ascent that met the bottom in midsummer of 1932. Now in the year 1930, in early part of May, in the state of Indiana, a resolution was introduced that was unanimously adopted by that state area. It provided, in substance, that every adult American has the inalienable right to work continuously at a saving wage. The resolution was widely copied throughout the country and widely commented upon, editorially and otherwise. One of the great newspapers of the country said that it founded a new Magna Carta for the working group. The resolution was passed by a number of state areas. We went to the national area. The national area in San Francisco in the year 1930 unanimously approved of that resolution and appointed a committee of four past friends with the president to draft the bill, to see that that bill is introduced through someone of the many, many members of Congress in both the Senate and the House. The chairman of that committee was the man who is the leader of this fraternity, Conrad H. Mann of Kansas City, Missouri. And associated with him were John M. Morin, who ultimately introduced another bill to which we shall refer later, Otto P. DeLuce of Indianapolis, and the Speaker. This bill was introduced in the lower house by Congressman Louis Ludlow of Indianapolis, a member of the order, and in the Senate by the United States Senator John J. Blaine of the state of Wisconsin. In the lower house, the bill was introduced on the 3rd of December in the year 1930. And so expeditious was the work of the members of this order that within 15 days after that bill was introduced in the lower house, the members of the order in support of the bill were accorded a hearing before the Judiciary Committee of the House of Representatives. That committee was so impressed with this bill that they appointed a subcommittee of seven to hear further arguments in connection with the bill. And that subcommittee of seven, consisting of four Republicans and three Democrats, appointed us 2 hours in which further to amplify the original argument. And at the end of 2 hours, and after they had consulted among themselves, they agreed unanimously to report the bill to the larger committee and request the larger committee to have the House of Representatives act favorably upon the Ludlow Eagle Bill. Now, just at that time, there was a change of administration. Just at that time, the tobacco, whose shadows began to fall upon this country in the year 1929, reached its greatest depth. And with the new administration in power, the banks closing, and the immediate problems of bread and butter before our people, naturally, this bill, as important as it was not pushed, but rather this orator devoted itself to the support of the measures that the President of the United States and the Congress advanced for the best interest of the people. At the present time, that bill is number two upon the calendar of the House. At the next session of Congress, this order, with its 600,000 men from California to Maine and from Canada to the Gulf, will unite shoulder to shoulder to use its influence, not in the secret rooms of the lobbyist hotel, but in the open where the light of the world may shine upon it. We shall use our influence to see that the members of the Senate and the members of the House of Representatives will favor the Ludlow Eagles Bill to the end, that employment may be stabilized, that there may be a cessation of these depressions that reach such tremendous depth, that at the most there shall only be mild undulations upon the ocean of economics and finance. Because this order is committed absolutely to the things that concern the home, and the home with the mother and the children can never be happy if there are depressions in which the children have too little food to nourish them, the mother and the father deny themselves the food to give to the children, and the next generation of Americans will feel, as a result of the lack of nourishment, as a result of the loss of morale through which the country is now passing now, the next generation will feel the effect of this tremendous debacle. Audience of the air, I thank you on behalf of the Grand Erie Fraternal Order of Eagles.
Thank you, Mr. Herring. Ladies and gentlemen, we have just presented brief addresses by George F. Douglas, Grand Worthy President of the Fraternal Order of Eagles, and Frank E. Herring, editor of the National Eagle Magazine. This Eagle Quarter tonight originated in the main ballroom of the Dayton Biltmore Hotel through the facilities of WSMK in Dayton, Ohio. Sidney Tenite speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.